I'm a big believer in practical application. Obviously, the reader has the power. They can do whatever they want. But I at least wanted to provide some kind of a manual that they could follow.
Write the world-changing book that will help grow your personal brand and your business as it makes the world a better place. Welcome to the Author's Corner, hosted by Robin Colucci. Every episode, we bring you some of the most successful authors, as well as other industry experts, to share some inspiration, motivation, tactical strategy, and fun. We'll also talk about the challenges and trends in the publishing industry. Don't get stuck in the idea phase. Join the Author's Corner today. Start writing the book you've dreamed about.
Hello and welcome to the Author's Corner. I'm your host, Robin Colucci, and today we're going to talk about something that people don't really talk about very much, but it does happen, and that is what to do when your ghostwriter ghosts you. And today, to have this conversation, I have invited to join us Matthew Lesser. So Matt started his career leading his family's struggling business. It quickly failed, and he got really depressed after that. But out of the ashes of that failure, a new business emerged, and he grew it from 3 people to nearly 200 while experiencing a 20-fold increase in revenue. So Matt is no stranger to success. And then he went ahead and sold that business to his trusted competitors. He then served in a C-suite role in private equity for 12 years, and then went ahead and began serving transitional C-suite roles in banking and commercial uniforms. Matt founded Uniquely Normal LLC in 2021 to equip leaders to solve their costly people-related challenges and help build flourishing organizations on the pillars of empathy, empowerment, and excellence. He is the author of 2 books, Unsatisfied When Less Is More, and his new book, Unengaged, Building Flourishing Organizations. He is a keynote speaker, as well as a facilitator and a certified executive coach, and is also married to his elementary school sweetheart, which is very sweet, and lives in Northeast Indiana there with his family. And so, but here's what Matt's going to talk to us about today. I don't know if you all recall when Scribe Media folded, and it was a bit of a story in the publishing world, because hundreds of clients were left in the lurch, hundreds of clients who had paid a great deal of money for book writing or publishing services were left with nothing when Scribe suddenly and unexpectedly folded. And so Matt was caught up in that, shall we say, transition. That would be probably the kindest way to put it. And he's going to share with us his experience of what happened, what that was like, how it impacted him, and what he did to make sure that his book still got published. I think you'll find a lot of great insight here. I hope you enjoy. So, Matt, welcome to the Author's Corner.
Thank you so much, Robin. I have been looking forward to our conversation today.
Well, so have I. So have I, because I think that, you know, your experience is something that, unfortunately, you're not the only one who's ever had this kind of experience. And I also imagine that a lot of people had a similar experience around the same time that you did.
Unfortunately is a good word.
Yes, exactly. So before we get into the story of, you know, what you went through, I'd love for you to set this up for us about, just tell us a little bit about what, because did you say this wasn't your first book?
Correct.
Okay. So yeah, tell us a little bit about what you had done as an author, like leading up to this, and what, and you know, why you decided to write your second book. And then I think we'll have a great context for what's to come.
Okay. Yeah, no, happy to share. I wrote my first book. It was one of those that I had the idea for probably 10 years, 5 years before I really got serious about it. I began to think about, okay, what is the message and what can this look like? A preliminary model came to me, and which is in the book now, but it was incomplete. And so I messed with this model for 3 years, doing research, talking to people and a lot of leaders in particular. And literally it finally came together one day. When I was at lunch with a friend, he used a word called flourishing, And so I said, tell me more about that word. And so so he did. And I wanted to do my own study on it. And I'm like, okay, that's the final word. That's the final piece of the puzzle. And I started writing. So it took me about 2 years to write it. I had never written a book before. I love the idea of writing a book. At the same time, I knew how stinking hard it was to write it and actually get it published. And so, but somebody introduced me during the process to Scribe Media. And so I went through the process of my first book with them. It's where I met my editor, who is amazing. Mm-hmm. And the reason that she's so endearing to me is because she's not just an editor, she's also a coach. Mm-hmm. And so she really coached me, which mm-hmm. is what I wanted, because during the process of finishing my first book, the idea for the second book came to me. The first book was not exactly what I was wanting to write. I wanted to write a book to leaders about leadership and about developing organizational culture in an intentional way so that everyone would flourish and reach their optimal potential. That's not how the first book evolved. And so I was somewhat frustrated with that. And so I wanted to write that. So during the process of publishing the first book, I asked my editor, Nicole, if she would be willing to work with me for the second book. And she said, absolutely. And so I turned right around and began negotiating with Scribe again to publish my second book. And I put a condition. I said, if I can't have Nicole, I'm not going to go with you.
Okay.
And so they made her available and we're off to the races. I had some other reservations though, Robin, that I didn't have the first time through. I should have listened to my gut and I didn't. And so I did actually do some additional due diligence on them after my first book was published, just to make sure that, like I said, I had a spider sense almost that there was something off. So I couldn't get that verified. And so I went with them again. A few months into it, the wheels fell off that bus.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting.
So that gets us to the second book anyway.
Yeah. So you so your spidey sense went off. Like what? Can you say what it was that was concerning you that you suspected but were unable to verify?
Yeah, the biggest one was when my first book was published, I was working with their team for the marketing and the promotion of the book, and we never got that rocket off the ground.
Oh, really?
And so literally 2 weeks post-launch, I fired them and said, hey, you're not doing what we agreed to do. So they were great. They returned my money. And then I actually hired someone that used to work there, and I'm still with him today. He's a wonderful marketing PR guy. And so that was my first big red flag. And so I found out then that they were basically doing away with all of their marketing. They were focusing more on this. And then the other big thing was that they just seemed to be changing their focus. There seemed to be less focus on the company and less focus on what they do, because I had a really good experience the first time. I really did. Other than a marketing piece.
Right.
But I just saw on social, especially, I saw a shift away from the company and more on the CEO. And the CEO it wasn't even about the company anymore. And so those were the
And there
like,
was
the two
a change
things.
In leadership, so, right? Yeah. Like Tucker Max, I think he sold to somebody else or something.
He did.
Was that around that same time?
I don't exactly know the timing of that. I think it might have been during the publishing of my first book or shortly before, somewhere in there. And then some people that I began working with all of a sudden weren't there anymore.
Uh-huh.
But, I had reassurance from some people both within and outside that, yeah, we're fine, we're good, we're going forward, until they weren't.
Until they weren't, right. So how did you find out? Because I remember that day when it was just like Scribe Media is closed, and people, and there was just like this big explosion on LinkedIn and people were going crazy. Lots of authors who were in the middle of projects and, just a big ta-da. So what was that like for you?
Well, obviously I have high levels of anxiety and, a friend of mine sent me a very simple email. It said, with a link in it, and said, you need to read this. And so I clicked on the link, and what it was is it was a copy of an internal memo, basically releasing what 90% of their staff at that time or something like that. It was a ridiculous number. Over 100 people, I know that. And so when I read that, literally my gut's jumping in my throat.
Right.
I don't know what to do. So I reached out to my publishing manager and said, hey, are you still there? What's going on? I just read this thing and, I'm a little freaking out here. And so, because at this point we had started the publishing process. They had my manuscript, and my editor, Nicole, had begun working on it, but it was, that was it. We were in the early stages. And so my publishing manager reassured me that things were tough, things were rough, but they were still, doors were open and it was still, you know, moving forward. And so we proceeded that way for a couple of weeks, and then eventually got to the point where they let her go. And I'm like, okay, this thing it's done. And it was.
And so then, okay, so now you have a partially edited manuscript. I imagine had you paid all of what you owed them, or like a large portion of what you'd owed them, or did you experience a financial loss as a result of this?
Yeah, I sure did. I had paid them, so it was monthly payments. I executed my contract. I don't like owing money to anybody, so I often will prepay or pay ahead on any time there's any kind of installment, whatever it is. And so I had actually paid ahead, and so I only owed them one final payment, which was a shame on. It was a shame that because otherwise, by the time I found out, I would have actually owed them I would have only paid about half. But as it was, I paid them 5 of 6 payments. And so, yeah, I took a loss. I sent a certified letter. My attorney helped me write a letter. I have a wonderful attorney. He's also a dear friend and mentor. And so he helped me write the letter to make sure that at least I could secure a position as a secured creditor.
Right.
But I mean, there's nothing there.
Yeah. It sounds like it was pretty gutted by the time things came apart. So you had more skin in the game than you hope now, that you wish now that you did. And so what did you do next?
Next thing I did is I called Nicole, my editor, and I said, can I hire you on the side to finish editing my book? And so I was able to have a contract with her. She finished editing, and then she introduced me to a proofreader who did the proofread. And so Nicole wound up doing, so normally the process that I was used to was you have somebody do an initial like grammar edit and those things, and then you have somebody else do a content edit, and then you have somebody else do the proofreading, and then finally your final edit. And Nicole wound up wearing multiple hats in the editing process, and she's very good at all of that, but she had somebody else do the proofreading who
Smart.
She used me to.
Yeah.
And
that,
then
that's
I said,
better.
I said, what's your relationship? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You need multiple eyes on
you,
it.
You really do. And you definitely don't want your line editor doing the proofreading, because if they missed it the one time, they're not going to catch it the next time, usually. Yeah.
Exactly. And so, but having those two, they were dynamic duo. I refer to them all the time. They were so amazing. But then during that time, I just asked Nicole, I said, and a couple of friends of mine, I'm like, what publishers do you know? And I said, I'd like to move away from just having a final product that just goes on Amazon, you know, KDP publishing. I wanted to move away from on-demand printing. I wanted to find a way, is there a way to begin moving toward more traditional publishing? You know, I know that as a new writer, unknown, I'm not necessarily going to be attractive to, the big four. I get that. I'm fine with that. Maybe someday, if the Lord allows, but okay. You know, I'm not a Patrick Lencioni. I respect the crap out of him, but I'm not him. And so I can't command the sales that he can. So a couple different publishers I reached out to, and then one of them quickly bubbled to the top. And the primary reason I went with them, Robin, twofold. One, I had a conference that I was speaking at in 5 months, the time that my book was, that all this happened. Actually, it was 4 months. I had 4 months to do it. And I was allowed to bring books for everyone. There was about just under 1,000 people at this conference, and I was allowed to have my book there for sale. And so I didn't want to miss out on that opportunity. And the one publisher I talked to would not guarantee publication date by then. And the publisher I went with, Ballast Books, did, and they delivered ahead of time. And so fantastic people to work with. Loved them dearly.
That's great. That's wonderful. So, and it seems like you regrouped rather quickly.
Yeah, we did. It was only about a 2-week period that I was, you know, basically scratching my head trying to figure out what to do, you know, because my editor was also trying to figure out what to do. She was not a W-9 employee. She was a 1099. And so she had a lot more flexibility there. And so once she committed to editing my book and finishing that process, then I knew, okay, we can still make progress. At that point, then honestly, it just came down to finding the right publisher and stroking a new check. So the good thing is that they are a more traditional publisher. I mean, I do have a stock of books available from my publisher that they are warehousing for me. It's also available on Amazon, but it's not the print on demand like my first book was.
And so how else would you describe them? Is there anything else about them that you would call like more traditional? in terms of their model or anything?
I think that, no, they're definitely hybrid, but I think the most traditional aspect is that they actually, you, there's an option where you can actually purchase books and they'll inventory for you and then they'll distribute out of that stock. They have a more traditional royalty structure versus getting paid for like print on demand. The royalty structure is very, it's not in my favor at all. And so they're, so the royalty structure with Ballast is much more favorable for me, the author.
For the author. So it's not like traditional publishing then.
No.
So, I mean, traditional publishing, you know, because they front all the production costs.
Right.
And, you know,
that's why they
actually have lower royalties because they have to make up for all the books that they paid large advances for that don't perform. And so that's
exactly.
And so sometimes a good hybrid deal can be a better strategy than a traditional deal, especially if you sell your books through speaking. So how do you, what is your primary way of selling books now that it's out?
You just nailed it. It's through speaking engagements, whether they are conferences or I do a lot of speaking with trade associations. And so oftentimes I'll negotiate as part of my fee that I'm allowed to sell books. And so that's one way. That's another way is through podcasts and interviews and being able to at some point, you know, share my contact information. And so, all that information is available on my website. So people can click through my website and get right to my publisher, get right to the book actually on the publisher's website. So
cool. Any other strategies that you find to be useful or work well for you?
I also have for selling books, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have two more. One is I have my own newsletter. And so it's a growing mailing list. And so I'll send direct information out through that. And then another one is that I will target certain organizations and I will send them a copy of usually both my books with a cover letter saying, you know, if you find this information, if you find these books useful and helpful, valuable for your organizational culture, I would love a chance to be able to engage with you. And that has worked too.
That's fantastic.
That leads to more consulting opportunities than it does selling books, but it does do both.
But you know what? I love that strategy. And I've had clients use that strategy only because the consulting side was so lucrative. You know, the book sales weren't really the thing. And they could give away 100 books and make $1 million. You know?
Yeah.
Versus...
Well, I'd love to... Yeah.
Well, this guy did.
Yeah, I'd love to make $1 million. I'm not there yet.
But. This guy did M&A, so.
Oh.
Yeah, so he got a piece.
It has been, the way that I have viewed this, Robin, is I have viewed this as an investment in my business. It's become a very expensive business card, but it's one that I would do all over again, quite frankly, because of what I have learned, the relationships that it's allowed me to develop and the people I've been allowed to meet. You know, I didn't necessarily write these books. I was hoping at some point to be able to break even at least, but I'm not there yet. But using them as leveraging them to try to build my consulting business, that has been an intended effect. So
Yeah. And you should, I would imagine you will definitely break even on the consulting side. I don't know about the book sales side, but the consulting side is really where the ROI so often is, you know, and what else? One of my favorite questions that I always ask my authors when we first start working together is, what do you see yourself doing with the book once it's out? And some of the things you're describing are really great answers, right? Because there's only, you know, book sales don't really reimburse you usually for the investment so much as what else you can do with the book and what you can do with the reader is really the key. Yeah. Terrific.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm with you 100% on that.
Hi there, Robin here. Have you been considering writing a thought leadership book that grows your business? How about writing a quality standout book with a real book publishing deal behind it that not only grows your business, but also grows your influence and reach? In case you're new to the Author's Corner, my name is Robin Colucci, and I help world-class experts write world-changing books that get published. With over 30 years of experience in the publishing industry, I have helped clients write and publish books with Big Five and other top publishers. Many have gone on to become bestsellers from Amazon all the way up to the New York Times, and others have increased their business income 600 times or more as a result of their book and partnering with me and my team. If you are a top-notch expert who is ready to write your world-changing book, go schedule a free consultation call with one of my trusted team members today. We have a limited number of slots available, and we only take clients who are committed to the process and want to get their book started now. If that sounds like you, go to www.worldchangingbooks.com/application to apply for one of our exclusive spots. Once again, that link is www.worldchangingbooks.com/application. Now, back to the show. So I'm curious, so you have unsatisfied and unengaged. What, this is a question I've been dying to ask you ever since I saw your books. What made you, because I see that un is in a different type than, you know, the word, the prefix of un is in, you know, white on one book and black on the other. And then the rest of the word isn't black on one book and white on the other. So obviously you're trying to separate that idea of satisfied or unsatisfied and engaged or unengaged. But what had you title the books that way? Like, tell me more about the thinking behind that, because I've just been very curious about it.
Well, that one, you know, I'd love to tell you that I had thought that all the way through from the very beginning, but I honestly kind of fell into it. So I love the word unsatisfied. Dissatisfied is probably more common. Unsatisfied, but I wanted a word that people, when they saw it, they would say, oh, that's a different spin on dissatisfied. I wonder what that's all about. And I wanted it to have, I wanted the opposite. So basically it's unsatisfied when less is more. So the solution to being unsatisfied is intentionally pursuing a life of less, not more. That's the overarching theme of the book. And so, and then when I came out with the second book, my focus is on organizational culture and how do you intentionally build a healthy organizational culture? And it came from just seeing report after report after report of organizations and working with clients, quite frankly, that we're trying to deal with, I can't tell you the times I heard, my employees, my team members aren't engaged. I'm having high turnover. Loyalty just isn't there anymore. You know, people don't have an ownership mentality, and so I kept hearing this word engaged, engagement. And so I'm like, man, these people really are unengaged. And I'm like, oh, wait, so the thinking and the design of the cover is actually also intentional. So the first two books have reverse, triangle.
Yeah.
So we put those two together and they're right behind me, but you put those two together, they form the top of an arrow. Uh-huh. And then I have ideas for two more books, both with un prefixes.
Okay.
And they're going to be straight. So you have an arrow when you're all set, when all done.
Oh, fun. Okay. So unsatisfied is about when you don't feel satisfied, pursue less. Right. So what is unengaged then? When you're not engaged, how does the un tie into that?
Yes. So how do you build an organizational culture where people are engaged? Build a flourishing organization. And then the book is really a field manual in how you do that. So I talk about these three pillars of organizational flourishing, and they are empathy, empowerment, and excellence. So three more E words. That's intentional. And it just so happened there were the three words I most wanted to write about anyway, so it worked out well. And then I also apply the same flourishing life model from the first book that is more towards individuals and personal growth and development to organizational growth and development, looking how do you identify which of your team members they're just checked out, right? They're unengaged versus those that are really engaged, thriving, flourishing, because those are the ones you want to replicate in your company. You know, those are the ones you want to tap for leadership, and you want them to be the ones mentoring new people coming in and so forth. And then in both books, the whole third part of the book is the application. It's the how-to. I'm a big believer. I do some adjunct teaching as well in an MBA program. And I'm a big believer in application, practical application. I just don't believe, you know, there are so many different philosophy books and conceptual books that are wonderful books, but what do we do with it?
Right.
And so I didn't want to leave it basically in the reader's hands saying, you know, you decide what to do. And so obviously the reader has the power, they can do whatever they want, but I at least wanted to provide some kind of a manual that they could follow.
Oh, that's terrific. So it's like a literally like a handbook the third part of the final.
It really is. Yeah. In both books. Yeah.
Great. Great. Wow, that's exciting. And so how do you use the book in your consulting, the books?
Yeah, so great question. So in whenever I'm doing coaching, executive or leadership coaching, I will oftentimes use Unsatisfied as a tool to be able to help, first of all, grow in self-awareness. I believe that leaders, if they want to grow in their leadership effectiveness, they start with themselves. And so we spend a lot of time growing in self-awareness and then growing in others' awareness. And then we grow in team effectiveness. And so a lot of the concepts that I talk about in the first book address that. And so this is what, so I use a lot of the tools I talk about there within that environment. And then unengaged is more from the team environment and the culture environment. You know, how do we build this thing so that people are excited to come to work, they're engaged in what they do, and they're committed for the long term? And again, I pull a lot of the tools out of the second book to do that, whether it's workshops or trainings or coaching or, you know, sitting in on executive teams. And I talk about a 30-30. So it's a, what did we do in the prior 30 days? And what are we going to do in the next 30 days to keep moving forward? That's often tied to strategic planning, but those kinds of tools, Robin, that's how I use those.
So now when you get an engagement to work with a company, do you roll the book? Like, does everybody on the team that you're going to work with get a book, or do you roll that into your contract, or how do you bring the book in, you know, on the economic side?
It depends. I've done it both ways. So oftentimes I will give the CEO or the owner of the company. All my clients are family owned businesses.
Oh, okay.
And yep. And so I will start by giving the books to the CEO or the owner of the business. And then sometimes they want me to provide them to everyone. Sometimes they buy them, and sometimes not. So
yeah,
because we unpack it regardless.
Yeah, it would depend probably on the type of business and what the teams are like and all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really great. Really great. All right. This is really interesting stuff and, some valuable, I think our listeners might have even gotten some valuable pointers on being satisfied and engaged. So
I hope so.
While we're at it. All right. So before I let you go, Matt, I have to ask you my signature final question, which is, okay, Matt, what have I not asked you that you would love to answer?
Good question. Well, I mean, the one that I would love to answer is how can people get in touch with me? Is that self-serving there? I would say, I guess, what's motivated me to go on this journey from the very beginning?
Great. Yes, I'd love to hear that. And we will put how to get in touch with you in the show notes. So don't worry about that. We got that covered.
All right.
All right. So answer that question. I love that question.
Yeah. So I spent the first part of my career in leading our family business. So I took it over at a time when I didn't actually want to, but I did. And so it, tragic story to begin with, I had to restart it. It grew. I eventually sold it to some friendly competitors. Then I spent the next 12 years in private equity, traveling the world, talking to leaders. Most of them were family businesses, and most of the acquisitions that we made in the firm were family-owned businesses. And I heard this story over and over and over, not three times, not five times. I probably heard it 100 times. Leaders telling me that the gist of the story was this. I spent my entire life building this thing, right? This business that I thought would give me freedom, flexibility, satisfaction, purpose, and meaning in my life. And here I am, and I've built this thing that is giving me the resources, the freedom, the time that basically I can do whatever I want to do, and I'm miserable. Why? Because I sacrificed what I thought was, what I know now was truly important to me along the way. Family, kids, and marriage, I heard that a lot, and oftentimes their own value systems. And they get to the point of saying, I don't even want this thing anymore. It's not worth it. I've lost my marriage. I've lost my kids. I've lost this. I've lost that. Yeah, the balance of my checkbook is huge, but who cares? I'm alone. I'm miserable and I hate it. That's what after I heard that and enough, and the more I worked with leadership teams and began to develop teams and develop leaders, I just grew this overwhelmingly passion for working and coming alongside leaders and especially in family businesses, so that they don't get to the end of their runway and they say, what in the world did I just do? And so I heard it from family, I heard it from friends to say, you know, you've been doing this for others for a long time. When are you going to do it on your own? And I think I heard it one too many times, Robin, and I believed him and I did it. And so, so I've been on this journey ever since.
I love that. And that is so brilliant. And it's so poignant too, right? Because it is, I think a lot of people do sacrifice those things that are important for a business, for a goal. And it can be very easy to look back and have a lot of regrets.
Yeah. Yeah. So true.
Yeah. And I remember, I mean, I made a gazillion mistakes. So I'm definitely not trying to say, oh, I'm so great. But this is something I did. But you know, when I was just starting my business as a writing coach, and I had actually just sold a previous business, so I had a little bit of money that I could, you know, afford to not be full on. But my kids were, you know, 3 and 6. And I made a conscious choice to grow slow initially. And I didn't really hit the gas for like another 5 or 6 years when, you know, until that they had, you know, they were out of preschool. They were more like middle school level. And I am so glad that I did, because I got to volunteer at their schools and I got to be there. I worked from home the whole time. I still work from home, but I could be there when they were sick. I could go get them. I could go to all their soccer games. I could teach exercise to the preschoolers at my daughter's my daughter's Montessori, you know, and I mean, I got to go to their school plays or their, you know, their events. And I don't regret it for a second. And I probably would, you know, could have made a lot more money those years, but man, it was worth it.
Mm-hmm. That is so good. And so you're a wonderful case study for an example of intentionally living a life without regret and flourishing so you can invest in your kids, you know. And that's what I've been able to do these last 3 years in particular, is invest in my older two kids. My oldest, he moved, and so he's doing his own thing now. But my daughter's in college, but she lives at home. She commutes. And my youngest is still in high school. And my youngest in particular, he and I had just kind of drifted apart because I was gone so much. And my wife just recently told me, she's like, I know we're not making the kind of money that you were hoping we make at this point. But she said, and she was highly emotional, tears. I mean, there were happy tears.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
She's like, it's worth it. She's like, the relationship that you and Blake, our youngest son, have been able to rebuild, she's like, is absolutely beautiful. And she's like, and it may have actually saved our son from going down paths, exploring, you know, I'm not getting affirmation from dad and from home or whatever. And so she said, you cannot put a price tag on that.
Yeah, that is the absolute truth. And, you know, good for you. I think it's not always an easy decision for people to make, especially in our culture and how focused it is on money. But yeah, at the end of the day, you want kids that you have a relationship with, you know, and that you can support along the way. And then, I mean, now I've been so rewarded because both my kids are doing great and we're friends, you know, now that they're 26 and they're going to be, well, okay, my daughter will be 25 and this year, and my son will be 29 this year, which is blowing my mind. But, you know, so now it's more like a friendship though, you know, more, I mean, they still want my advice every now and then or whatever, but yeah. And it is such a gift. I'm so grateful. And I'm so grateful to you, Matt, for sharing and being here with us today and sharing beautiful story. And I love that we ended on this note, which is really
me too.
The most important part of not only this episode, but our lives. So thank you for that, for bringing that into the conversation.
Well, thank you. I agree wholeheartedly. So it's been a wonderful conversation. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. And thanks for being with us on the Author's Corner.
Thank you for tuning in to another amazing episode of The Author's Corner. You're one step closer to writing the world-changing book you've dreamed about for years. To access today's show notes and other helpful resources, simply visit our website at theauthorscorner.com. A positive review would be appreciated. Until next time.